I got involved in this issue. I first heard about it in 2002. I went to a little seminar in the mountains somewhere held by a journal, and I thought, this is really interesting and concerning, but I really don't know very much about it, but I filed it away as potentially interesting. And then, for the next decade, I became involved in looking at the relationship of toxicants to neurodevelopmental disorders and began to see that there seems to be something in common across them. And in my work on children in particular, but not only children with neurodevelopmental disorders, I came up with a kind of a list captured from a lot of literature of physiological systems that are disrupted in environmental exposure. Now, I should say that for me, and this Documenting Hope project that I work on, we operate on what we call the total load model, or a cumulative impact, which means there are many exposures. There's no one exposure. We're walking around constantly exposed to Wi-Fi, but there's also all kinds of chemicals in our water, in our air, in our food, and so forth. And we have in our bodies ancient systems that are involved in processing chemicals and other things in our body. And that's what we have. We're not basically developing a new physiological pathway anytime somebody patents a new thing that you can be exposed to. So these things are shunted down various pathways, and those pathways can get overloaded, and you don't need a giant dose of any one thing. You can have a lot of little doses that add up. So that's what the total load model says in a nutshell. So when you get to electromagnetic issues, in particular regarding the brain, electromagnetic properties of brain cells and of the whole magnificent liquid crystal gel thing we have in our heads, the electromagnetic properties help explain our brain's computational powers. And not only in our brains, but actually every cell and every organ of our body has not only biochemistry, but electromagnetic signaling. And we need these things both in brain and body to be optimized in order to be at our best and to fulfill our potential. And at the same time, we're surrounded by exposures that are not developed in relationship to what would be best alongside of our own electromagnetic makeup. And so what we have is evidence that the electromagnetic fields and radio frequency radiations are important contributors to degrading the exquisite fine-tuning of the optimal chemical electrical functioning of our bodies. Now, I've been thinking about toxicants. I had been thinking about them. They affect the brain, but the activity of the brain is at the electromagnetic level. So in order for toxic substances to affect brain waves, they've got to be, there's a word, transduced into the electromagnetic domain, whereas we're walking around with exposures that are speaking the language of the brain in terms of electromagnetic waves, but they're not speaking the native language of any organism. So we have confusion in how we deal with this. So this is something to think about. And it's also, I should say, that a lot of inventions that we are surrounded by in our consumer products and our infrastructure are basically developed in ways that were comfortable for what people had been using in laboratories, and they didn't really necessarily try, or mostly do not try, to make them more congenial to living organisms. So I want to review for you some of the ways that electromagnetic fields and radio frequency radiation can damage living systems. First of all, there's cellular stress. Production of heat shock proteins is an example. These radiation forms damage cell membranes. Now, mitochondria are the energy factories of our cells, And mitochondria, there's plenty of evidence that these forms of radiation damage mitochondrial production of energy. Mitochondria are exquisitely vulnerable, not only to electromagnetic fields and radio frequency radiation, but to tens of thousands of chemicals. Our brains operate with the highest energy demand in our body, so to have a problem with mitochondria, even a subtle problem, starts to make our functioning less than optimal. Oxidative stress is something that comes along with breathing oxygen in our environment. There's a normal production of pro-oxidants, which we usually quench in our bodies with antioxidants. But when you get overloaded by pro-oxidants causing oxidative stress, you fall behind. And oxidative stress is associated with many diseases, from heart disease and diabetes to cancer and neurodegenerative diseases. These radiations are genotoxic. They damage proteins. This has been abundantly demonstrated. And maybe some of you have heard about glutathione. It's the most, it's a very strong detoxification and antioxidant produced in our bodies. And it is one of the major antioxidants to mop up the oxidative stress. And it's depleted by EMF radio frequency radiation. Calcium channels are very, very important throughout the body and also especially in the nervous system and in the heart. And the function of these channels is altered as well, which is really bad for tuning of functions. Now, impacts on the brain. This is a paper that was published by Nora Volko at the National Institute of Drug Abuse. So what you see is on the left that there's more red. That indicates there's a greater response in the brain, and it's not an optimal response when the cell phone is on than when the cell phone is off. And this is an indication of glucose metabolism that gets higher. And this is not a constructive reaction of the body. So not only do you have damage to cell membranes, but you have damage to barriers, the gut-blood barrier, the blood-brain barrier, in various organs. There's evidence that the entropy, that is the sort of randomness, so to speak, of brain waves is increased through exposure to these radiation forms. These radiation forms can interfere with sleep and the brain's production of melatonin. They can contribute to immune problems, and they can contribute to stress at chemical, immune, and electrical levels. And I would say this total load cumulative impact, because it interacts with a lot of other stressors at these levels. Now, there's also been evidence that there are impacts on fertility. The laptop computer, even though they're called laptops, it's really not healthy to use laptops on your lap, especially if you're pregnant. Now, this picture is hard to read, but basically, the electromagnetic fields can impact many level of supports and stages of fertility, including impacts on the pineal gland, the sperm, the ovary, the embryo, and, of course, the next generation of organisms, human and other, that grow up with these exposures, creating those kinds of changes. Here's some work showing that the brains of children and adolescents are more vulnerable. So you see on the left is a 34-year-old, on the middle is a 6-year-old, and on the right is a 3-year-old. The brains are not only smaller, they're shaped differently, the bones are thinner when you're younger, especially quite young. And so having a device really close to the head of a young child penetrates, you can see, further into the brain. And the here it says, when used by children, the average radio frequency energy deposition is 2 times higher in the brain and 10 times higher in the bone marrow of the skull compared with mobile phone use by adults. And here is a study, it's a modeling, it's a mathematical modeling using commonly used methods of the absorption level of radiation from a tablet in the brain of a child. And this showed that the penetration, you don't see an adult image here, but there are adult images in the paper, penetrates substantially into the head of the child just from more or less having it in the position that you see in the photograph there. Now, there exist international guidelines for diagnosis of electromagnetic EMF-related illnesses. Electromagnetic or electrical hypersensitivity syndrome is it's very disabling, and most physicians wouldn't really be trained to piece together the different symptoms or into that diagnosis, or even to think of asking what a person's exposure levels may be, sources of exposure and exposure levels may be. So it's important for us to raise awareness. Children in schools who are in this high Wi-Fi environment may be having symptoms that their doctor wouldn't put together. And if you don't think of it, you might try treating them with drugs or other kinds of treatments where a mitigation of the exposure might be much more effective. So what are some solutions? First of all, the cumulative impact of stressors, whether or exposures, whether they be chemical or electromagnetic, are pulling you down. And I mentioned that antioxidants are among the things that can help protect you. A variety of nutrients can build resilience so that you're less vulnerable to the exposures that you get. And antioxidants, the rainbow diet, where there are different chemicals in plants of different colors that are all have various kinds of protective functions. So you definitely want to build your resilience. You also want to avoid unnecessary exposures. Don't carry your cell phone in your pocket. Don't keep things on. We've already heard some of this. So you want to improve the support of resilience, and you want to reduce exposures both to electromagnetic fields and to other sources of negative impact. And meanwhile, given how much we've already learned about the subtle biological, cellular, and electrical impacts of EMF and RFR, we need to update seriously out-of-date regulations to take into account how exquisitely vulnerable we now know we are, and to aim for safer ways of meeting our needs, more congruent with the way organisms work, for communication and for other devices that need or generate EMF or RFR. And then going back to the great step one of Alcoholics Anonymous, admit that we have a problem and then do something about it. So thank you.